are back for this week's Cannabis Corner. My name is Lucas Barfield, and joined by my co-host, Uncle Dig. How's it going today, Dig?
Hey, it's doing great. It's sunny, the sun is shining, and the river levels are pretty high down here because it has been raining.
Yeah, I cannot say the same here. It's raining today, actually, in July in Seattle area, which is kind of odd, but it's been kind of a crazy 2 weeks here because it's Father's Day, Juneteenth, then my anniversary, then my birthday, then the 4th of July, so it's like about 2 weeks of just celebration, which is a really good thing. But when we start moving in the middle of July, I'm kind of like, all right, let's kind of get back to regular time. But then my brother's coming out next week, so that's really cool. So it's going to be a great summer here. What's going on down your way this summer, Dig?
Oh, yeah. We got family coming in and out, you know, like you said. But it's getting ready to be the fire season. So people usually don't come out here to visit in late July and August. So I think I'll get a little break from a lot of the celebration, like you said, and be able to, like, focus on some more, like, around-the-house projects and definitely on the garden.
Yeah, I hear you. And we got a great show coming up today. Later on, we have a guest. Blake Schroeder is going to be joining us. And Blake is the CEO of Cannaway. And he is here today to talk to us about CBD, some things going on with novel foods and CBD across the pond in Europe and the UK. And Blake drops some cannabis information and knowledge that I had actually never thought of. So stay tuned to that later on in the show. And now, let's check the news.
This is a Cannabis Sativa special report.
And this is going to be kind of a different show today, and it's going to be sort of our CBD special. And we wanted to do this show because there was a report released earlier this year about how the CBD industry and their labeling and testing is just a cluster, and it's a really big problem. But before we get into the report, Dig and I are just going to chat about some things about CBD, and we're going to start with sort of our experience with CBD. You know, it wasn't until around 2013-14, Dig, that I ever even heard the three-letter CBD. How about yourself?
I think it was around that time as well. I wasn't super read up on any cannabis stuff until I really was able to get out of the military and have more time to, like, research it. So around 2013 is when I started hearing about it too, but I didn't really know much about it. And then as the industry and as people were able to educate themselves around the plant more, I started seeing certain cultivars like Charlotte's Web was one, ACDC was another. I've actually grown ACDC before. And I found that the one-to-ones and the two-to-ones CBD cannabis flower, when I smoke it, helps me with some of the stuff, with some long-term inflammation that sometimes normal cannabis doesn't always help with. So I've actually slowly over the years incorporated CBD into my morning routine. So I always smoke a joint first thing in the morning of a CBD strain that I grow here in the house called CBD Dutch Treat. It's got really low THC. It's about 4%. And it got an 11% THC. And then right now I've got another plant in addition to that called Canatonic, which is a true one-to-one CBD THC. I found, and I believe, that CBD works best in conjunction with THC, even if just a low amount of THC is present. That helps unleash some of that entourage effect that you don't get with CBD alone.
Yeah, I have found that same thing. And I hadn't actually not heard about CBD. When I first heard about it, I was really kind of surprised because I had been using cannabis all the way back from like 1994 and had been using it pretty heavily and had seen a lot of cannabis, but just had never heard of it. So, and then when I first came to my knowledge, I didn't use it for quite a long time. And people have always said, well, it doesn't get you high. But I have found that not necessarily be true because, like you were saying, the entourage effect, when you throw in the CBD, some THC, some terpenes. I mean, I have some THC, some CBD hemp, which hemp, of course, is mostly CBD or CBG because it's less than 0.3% THC. So all those oils are filled up with other cannabinoids. And it will knock you out. It is really strong because of the terpene content. So, yeah, CBD is a sort of a different molecule, and it does have a different effect for different people. And I've tried that Dutch treat of yours, Dig. It's a really great cultivar. And one of the reasons is because it does have that really strong sort of a great terpene profile along with that CBD.
Yeah, it's got a sweet, it's sweet like a lot of the stuff I grow, but it's also got like a really weird like back a note to it. It does have an interesting flavor profile for sure. I would say that I kind of agree with you. I think what a lot of people say is CBD is psychoactive, but it doesn't inebriate you is what they like to say. I don't necessarily have an opinion on that. I know that when I was traveling in a state where cannabis was heavily illegal, I bought some CBD gummies at like a convenience store, basically. And those like helped take the edge off of not being able to get any cannabis, but they weren't a good substitute, I would say. And that's my experience with using CBD as a substitute for, you know, full spectrum cannabis, which it's just not.
Yeah, it's not as great because you're lacking all that entourage effect. Yeah, the isolates are a little bit different when you're just talking about like pure CBD. You're not really going to get the same effect as like a flower or some kind of full spectrum tincture or something like that. And I was doing a little reading and just kind of confirming some things I'd read before on CBD. And the reason why CBD, like you said, they say it's not psychoactive and it doesn't get you high. And one of those reasons is because THC, there's receptors in your brain, the CB1 and CB2 receptors, and most of the CB1 are in your brain, and that's why when you consume THC that you get quote-unquote high, because those receptors are being activated. Well, according to my research, CBD doesn't really interact with those CB1 and CB2 receptors as much. They're more prone to interact with things like serotonin and serotonin receptors. And that's why CBD is great with things like depression and anxiety. And it sounds like you sort of had that experience.
Yeah. I think that would follow along with my experience for sure. I think that CBD definitely has a place in every patient's toolbox. But I don't think it should be your only tool as far as cannabis is concerned. I think a varied diet of cannabis, as it were, is the healthiest way to consume. So not just consuming, you know, a low THC cultivar or a high THC cultivar or, you know, something you and I might consider like a mid, like some of the old school strains that only come in at like 13 or 14%.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you should try all of that and see what works best for you. And I think what you'll find is that in a long enough timeline, you'll end up gravitating towards those CBDs and those, I would say, mid-tier potency for long-term use. And you may not always gravitate towards what's like chemically most potent because it might not have the best terpene profile, but your mileage may vary.
Yeah. It really depends, and I add a little CBD and also a little CBG, and we'll have us a CBG special coming up sooner or later. And another thing CBD is really good at that they use with cancer patients is also sort of lessens the effect of THC. So what you can do is you can give larger amounts of THC along with CBD. CBD will counteract those really bad effects of a lot of THC, like anxiety and hallucinations and all those kind of things. So CBD can kind of counteract some of that. I just wanted to mention a really cool thing about CBD and CBG is CBG is the mother cannabinoid. And in a plant that starts to grow, the genes will tell it, say, hey, produce this much CBD and this much CBG. So that's just a really interesting fact about CBD, is it comes out of CBG as far as the cannabinoid evolution on the plant.
Oh, wow, that's really interesting. So the plant starts producing that first?
Well, it starts producing CBG, and then the gene tells it, hey, produce CBD or produce THC. And I actually have some hemp that the hemp has been bred that CBG gene does not convert to anything and just keeps going on with CBG. And it's a CBG only strain. It has like one something CBD and like 0.001 THC in it, and no terpenes, Dig. It's a very interesting cultivar.
Yeah. Is that the one that was in the blunt that you gave me?
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, that stuff's really nice. It's nice. I had it. I shared that with a friend who can't consume THC cannabis due to work, and he really enjoyed it.
Yeah, some really interesting things going on with all the CBGs and CBDs and THCs, and that's why the high-potency THC, the way the market is trying to be pushed, kind of like alcohol, they want to push those strong alcohols and they want to push those strong THCs, but like you were saying, consumers who consume cannabis for medicinal purposes and in long term, I think we have found that the lower THC strains, higher CBD strains are kind of a little better for that long term use.
Now I will say that when I cultivate, I look for strains that people describe as strong.
Mm.
But that's mostly what I'm looking for is a head effect.
Yeah.
Like there's some you know, discrepancies in testing. I don't want to get off here, but a lot of people inflate numbers. But I've had, you know, high 20s, you know, THC cultivars that hit really hard, but they don't last. It's like you get really, really, you know, medicated for like, you know, 7 or 8 minutes, and then like a couple of minutes after that, you're like, oh, okay, well, I would like to smoke more now. That was fine for a minute. And so I find that like a lot of the strains that stick to your bones and have like a lasting medical effect also have like really good terpene profiles, like we've been saying. And that may not be as chemically potent. And what I mean by chemically potent is, I mean, if you took them to a lab and tested them, they might not come in at the highest level of THC. However, their effect might seem more potent than those higher THC strains.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I was saying with that hemp cultivar I had that's just CBD and then really strong terpene. You smoke a joint of it, it'll knock you out. As opposed, like you were saying, sometimes you smoke a high THC joint, it's like, okay, whatever. It just kind of depends on that. It really is, we talk about this a lot on the show, it really is all those, the entourage effect and all those different cannabinoids and things working together. Now, here we get into what we were doing the CBD special all about, and we wanted to bring people the Cannabis Corner is all about bringing people information they can use, and this report that we have, this is a report from Leaf Report. It came out about 2 months ago, but it really takes a deep dive into the CBD industry. They tested over 4,000 products from 188 brands. And they really found some sort of disturbing results when it comes to testing. What are a couple of the things that stood out for you, Dig, on this Leaf Report CBD potency study?
There's a lot of concerning things that were found. A couple that stood out to me is that only 12% of brands had all their products fall within acceptable potency variance limits.
Mm-hmm.
So for the audience, what that means is that if you test something and then someone else tests it, what's the degree of difference between the third party results and yours? And they weren't hitting that mark. Their results were so inaccurate that they weren't falling within those limits.
Only 12% fell within those limits.
Yeah, that was it. Only 12% had all their products, you know, basically on had honest testing. Another thing that really, really weirded me out was that 88% of brands that tested their products for potency had at least one product test beyond the 10% variance for potency in comparison with 84% in 2021. Mm. So not only is there a problem with, you know, their testing being accurate, it's actually gotten worse by 4% over the last year. So it was 84% in 2021, and in 2022 it's 88%. So it's getting worse.
Yeah, those are really disturbing results, especially when there are people out there who are they use CBD products thinking they can get around THC test. And that can be a really big problem. Folks are like, oh, well, it's just CBD. Who cares about the test? Well, CBD, different amounts of CBD sometimes will make you go to sleep, but another amount might make you stay up or have a different effect on you. Like you were just talking about, that entourage effect, just a little variance here and there with the chemical makeup of a cannabis product can have wildly different effects.
I mean, yeah, I mean, plant to plant, there can be a variance depending on, you know, yeah, it undermines consumer trust too, because now y'all know this, and now you have to look for brands that you can trust. Further, another thing that I noticed that really bothered me from this report, only 7% of the 188 CBD brands that they tested their complete product range for potency, pesticides, heavy metals, and microbes, all of those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so only 7% did all those. Yeah, wow.
Yeah, and so I would hope that if I'm buying a CBD product, that it has been tested for potency, for pesticides, and for heavy metals and microbes. That's kind of a bare minimum. It bothers me that that's not happening.
Yeah, it's not. And here's some other stats here. So 28% of the brands tested did no pesticide test, and 26% didn't test for heavy metals at all, and then 24% didn't test for microbes. And I really feel like there's really no excuse for that. Those tests cost $125. Will get you a pest test, a heavy metal test, and a microbe test. It just seems to me if you are putting out cannabis products out there on the market, then you should be able to have the money to go out there and get your batches tested, because CBD is not like it's not like the 502 where they make you test in 5-pound lots. It's not regulated that closely, I don't think. You can test 100 pounds, you know what I mean, and be like, all right, this is 100 pounds and we're going to test it all. And those tests can add up pretty quickly. But if you have a massive hemp farm and a massive hemp processing facility, don't you think that you should have a little money to just do some little measly test, Dig?
Yeah, you would think so. And also, I will say that the markup on the CBD products seems pretty substantial.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think the profit margins are small. I mean, they can't be if they're charging this much for a product that costs as much as they're paying to produce it. Now, I will say this report did bring up some stuff where people are making some improvements.
Okay.
The number of brands that carry out no purity testing has dropped from 25 to 20%. So you're talking about, you know, a substantial increase over 1 year of people that are doing purity testing.
Okay, so purity test is good.
I mean, I would like that. I would like that number to be closer to 5%.
Mm-hmm.
For a healthy industry, maybe closer into the, you know, single, you know, even into the 1 or 2%.
Yeah, that seems like a more reasonable expectation. Yeah.
And the number of brands that carry out absolutely no testing at all has dropped from just 3 brands to 2 in their sample this year. So in that regards, everyone's at least making some sort of half-hearted attempt to test, except for 2 brands.
Yeah, and again, like Dig mentioned, so if you are a CBD consumer, and there are a lot of people out there that just want to consume just CBD and not THC for a whole wide variety of reasons, like Dig was mentioning, you really need to find some brands you trust. Now, one thing over here at the Leaf Report, they do have some brands on there that did score good. We're not going to mention any of those. You can go look those up at the Leaf Report, and you can find that link at thecannabiscorner840.blogspot.com. That's where you can go over and subscribe to our blog and find more information about the show. So be sure to check out those brands and be careful out there. And I always tell folks, CBG will pop a drug test, and I would not try to use CBD to get around the THC laws if you have to take a drug test, because it's going to be a big problem. Just be careful out there with your brands. And if you have brands that you like, maybe comment over on our blog and let some people know about some brands that you like if you're listening to the show.
Yes. Yeah, that's very true. And so with an industry that has some of these problems, and even just with the nature of how drug testing works, I would highly urge you to seek employment where they don't test for cannabis if you're going to use even CBD. They're still using the cannabis plant, and you know, stranger things have happened than small amounts of THC ending up in batches of CBD. It's happened before. It will happen again. So I would not, you know, trust your employment to this.
And I just want to mention, if you are interested more about CBD, you can find some really great information at the Mayo Clinic. Just search CBD Dosing Mayo Clinic, and they have a really good page over there, and they get really down to details on how to take CBD as far as dosing goes. Even the things like a kid younger than 1 year old, they go that far down in the detail, like how much to take, how many milligrams per kilogram that the kid weighs. So there is a lot of information out there on the internet about CBD. Just be careful where you're looking and make sure you have a great source to be getting your CBD. And now let's get on to our interview today with Blake Schroeder.
This episode of the Cannabis Corner is brought to you by Advocates for Medical Cannabis. Learn more about this organization at thecannabiscorner840.blogspot.com.
And we are back for this week's interview, and this week we are joined by Blake Schroeder, and Blake is the CEO of Cannaway, a major CBD manufacturer, and he is here today to talk to us about some interesting news that is coming out of the EU when it comes to novel foods and CBD, and some other things concerning his company and some CBD information. How's it going today, Blake?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you doing? And thanks for having me on.
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good. Great to have you on today. And just wanted to let you know, this is going to be part of our CBD special show. And we have a lot of information on this show about CBD. So thanks for being on with us today. But before we get into the news out of the EU, just take a minute to tell us a little bit about yourself and your company, Cannaway.
Sure. Thanks, Lucas. So Cannaway is actually a subsidiary of our parent company, Medical Marijuana, Inc. You can find our ticker symbol, MJNA. We're listed on the OTC markets. Cannaway is one of the companies that distributes our products. It operates in the United States. It was the world's first ever direct selling cannabis-based company. We're in the U.S., all over the EU. We sell our products also in Mexico and Japan and South Africa and lots more coming. So we're excited to have kind of created the space as the first company to ever launch a non-psychoactive legal cannabis-based product. And we're excited to be involved in, you know, creating the global change and being a force for positive good.
Wanted to ask you, why is it so important that CBD be approved as a novel food product in the UK?
You know, maybe important, maybe not important. I guess it depends who you ask. Actually, the Polish courts recently issued an opinion saying that CBD is not a novel food. And so there's some real discrepancy in the law over in Europe right now. The UK has asked for companies to submit novel food applications. We have done that. There's a number of companies that have. Those that haven't aren't supposed to be selling in the UK anymore, and we hope that they're not. But we know that they are. But yeah, a novel food application basically grants the government an opportunity to, you know, review the safety and efficacy profile of the products and make sure that it's good for their consuming public. You know, the opposite side of that is, you know, a novel food is just that, it's novel. And so the question really is whether hemp or cannabis-based products were in the consumer's diet prior to, I think, the date is sometime in the 1980s or 70s. And we would argue that it was. But since they've asked us to file the novel food application, we've gone ahead and done so together with the leading group in Europe that's behind the application. And so we're proud to be a part of that.
So what is the approval process like for CBD when it comes to novel foods in the UK?
Yeah, so it's, you know, basically the novel foods law all over Europe says that if there is an ingredient that wasn't in the food chain prior to a certain date, and I'm sorry, I don't have that date off the top of my head. Again, I think it was sometime in the 70s or 80s, then you have to file what's called a novel food application so that you can sell the products in that country. And so the question really is, was cannabis in the food chain prior to that date? We would argue that it was. But, you know, since they've asked to have companies file this. We're one of the responsible companies. You know, we're one of the companies that wants to follow all the rules and regulations. And so we've gone ahead and we've submitted that novel food application in the UK along with a handful of other companies. And it basically will provide them with all kinds of data that they can analyze with respect to CBD, what it is, how it works, whether it's safe, which we obviously know that it is, and all that kind of information so that it can be freely sold on the marketplace.
How are you operating in the UK right now without novel foods approval?
The UK government has basically said that if a company is on has filed a novel food application, I think the deadline was about a month ago, maybe a month and a half ago, that you can continue to sell on the market. Other companies are not supposed to be, the companies that did not file a novel food application are not supposed to be selling on the market. And so then it comes, you know, to the local regulatory authorities, whether or not they're enforcing that or not.
Yeah, it seems like it's kind of similar to the United States, where the slow regulatory processes are leading to kind of a gray market. And you have some people going forward to have authority and permission like yourself, and then other operators that kind of come on and kind of set up that gray market. The European Food Safety Authority just announced that they were putting these novel food applications on hold. I know you mentioned that you don't think it is. One of the reasons is that the food, the CBD was in food before that date in the 1970s. Are there any other reasons why you think that they should go ahead with these novel food applications for CBD?
Yeah, so, you know, the law was set up so that you could introduce, again, something that's novel to the market. I would suggest that cannabis is not novel at all. In fact, I would suggest that it was in our food chain for a very, very long time until governments, you know, until cannabis was included, you know, or THC specifically as a controlled substance. But, you know, cannabis has been in our diets, I mean, for centuries. You know, the founding fathers of the United States grew hemp. And where do you think they brought it from? They brought it from Europe, because that's where they were from, and specifically from the UK. And so there was cannabis growing all over the place, and the animals were eating the cannabis. And of course, then, you know, when we eat milk or drink dairy, there was cannabis. There was residue in the meat that we ate, and the milk that we drank. In fact, mother's milk today, you'll find traces of CBD in mother's milk. And so it was a part of our food chain, a part of our diet that was eradicated. You know, started by the United States when they said that THC was a controlled substance, and then cannabis was not freely grown anymore.
And it really is odd they're doing this, considering that countries like Spain, Switzerland are announcing they're going forward with medical cannabis. Germany is about to do recreational cannabis. And there's a whole lot of markets opening up in Europe and Africa and all around the world. So these guys are just kind of going backwards, it seems. And it's just a really odd timing.
You know, I mean, I don't believe that CBD is a novel food at all. We do support having regulation of the industry so that you can get great products on the market. I don't think this is the right way to go about it. And you're right. You know, it makes it difficult for companies to operate. Like, you know, Europe, it's similar to the United States. There are states in a federation, in a federal government. And the UK has recently left that in this case. But when every single member state has, you know, different rules, it makes it incredibly difficult to be compliant. And of course, our company, as the founder of the industry, we want to be 100% compliant in everything that we're doing. It just takes an awful lot of, you know, making sure that you've got all your legal team and all your regulatory ready to go so that you can be compliant in all those marketplaces.
So now that this roadblock's up, but all these markets are opening up, like we just mentioned, what do you think are the next step when it comes to novel foods and CBD in Europe?
No, I think there'll be an interesting discussion. And again, I do not believe that CBD is a novel food. In order to just protect ourselves, we've gone ahead and we've filed the application. I believe that there'll be no challenge with the application because CBD is safe. I mean, our company presented years ago at the World Health Organization about the safety and efficacy of non-psychoactive cannabis. There's no reason that they wouldn't grant a novel food application if it came down to that. You know, it's just how much time and effort do you really want to spend on regulating a product that's so good for people and is proven to be, you know, non-addictive, not habit-forming, and you know, non-toxic, good for people. It just seems like it's you know, a use of resources that could be better well be spent elsewhere.
Very true. I wanted to ask you before we get out of here, is there anything else would you like to leave us with as far as what your company is doing with any CBD studies or anything? And how can people find out more about what you're doing within the CBD space?
Absolutely. We've been on the cutting edge, you know. I mentioned that we presented the World Health Organization, and we used data at that presentation from some research that we've done down in Mexico. We've got a business in Mexico, and we have some of the leading neurologists down in Mexico who have published a series of studies about our products. Dr. Sal Garza is the leading neurologist in Mexico and has done a bunch of research with our product. In 2016, when the FDA was considering changing or making more clear the law here in the United States and adding hemp into the farm bill, our company actually presented at the FDA. And in advance of that, we had participated in a study with a company called Valid Care that was basically studying whether CBD had any intoxicating or any toxic effects with respect to liver enzymes. And of course, the study came out and showed that natural herbal plant-based CBD did not have any kind of negative impact or toxicity with respect to the liver. There was some concern about that. So we're very happy with that result. So, you know, we've got another company. We have a cannabinoid-like substance that is derived in a lab. It is owned by one of our investment companies called Neuropathics. They actually got a government grant, an NIH grant, to be able to study this substance. We believe it's going to be a great, great solution for neuropathic pain. As we all know, the opioid epidemic caused a crisis in this country, and we believe there are better ways. That company's called Neuropathics. If you're interested in learning about their grant or what they're studying, you can find them at neuropathics.com, or their ticker symbol is NPTX. Of course, our company's Medical Marijuana Inc., our ticker symbol is MJNA, and you can find all kinds of information there.
This episode of the Cannabis Corner is brought to you by Advocates for Medical Cannabis. Learn more about this organization at thecannabiscorner840.blogspot.com.
All right, welcome back, and now it's time for our It's a Bus segment. And this week we have a case out of San Diego, California. And this has been something that we've talked about on the show before. The California market, legal market, for a lot of reports is having problems. But one of the big problems California is having is they still have the legacy medical cannabis grows, or people that are medical cannabis dispensaries, they're still hanging around, and there are a lot of them saying they're not going to leave. And it looks like, though, this is right off the IRS's website. And when you make the IRS's website, you're in big trouble.
Oh, yeah.
So the IRS just really goes after this dispensary here that they busted down in San Diego. Give us some more details about the case, Dig.
Yeah, it seems like, according to the IRS website, from 2019 to 2022, these individuals were operating an unlicensed illegal cannabis business. I'm not going to say the business, which functioned primarily as a wholesale supplier of cannabis and cannabis products to unlicensed and illegal cannabis dispensaries in Southern California. Additionally, LA is accused of operating as an unlicensed illegal cannabis dispensary in its own right, serving individual customers. And then it goes on to explain the details of the search warrant that was executed in April 2021. They seized more than 3,000 pounds of cannabis with and five firearms, et cetera, et cetera. They were hiring armed security. It is California. It is dangerous to have any kind of cannabis business. So the firearms being there isn't as weird as people think it is. And then they go into details about the case. And they go into some pretty specific details about how these folks operated. including money counters and hotels and all this stuff. So this is kind of serves to everyone letting know, like, federal law enforcement is operating in California, targeting cannabis organizations specifically. Federal law enforcement is also in Oregon and Washington doing the same thing.
Yeah, and it really looks like they're trying to make an example out of these folks. When you read the press release there on the IRS's website, I mean, they just really go after these folks. And they use things like, the number one thing that motivates these drug dealers is greed. And that's just a really crazy statement coming from the United States, where, you know, our whole country, our economy is based on getting more money and all the capitalism, and we can go on and on. But it just shows, and one of the things that I read in another article somebody pointed out is all the dispensaries in California are illegal under the federal government. So they're just kind of picking and choosing who they go after, and they decided to go after these folks down there in San Diego.
Yes, and when federal agents start, you know, running around town, it has unfortunate second and third order of effects. You know, maybe you don't have anything to do with a cannabis business, right? But maybe they get dirt on you about something else you did a while ago because they want to leverage you to roll on someone else that you know about or something. They start looking for weak links in communities and isolating people from their communities. It's not good.
Yeah, and the Cannabis Corner does support a regulated cannabis industry. At least I do, and I'm pretty sure Dig does. But we don't support it at the expense of continuing the drug war and locking people up in prison and jail. My solution personally would be to go to these people and try to work with them to bring them into some type of regulation. And by all means, just not lock them up in prison. That's what we are 100% against.
Yeah. I don't personally, like, I'll take a regulated system, but I don't want it at the barrel of a Glock held by a law enforcement person. Like, I don't want, I don't think cannabis, the cannabis industry should be regulated or even, like, have to interact with the police. There's such a long history of the police harassing, abusing, and kidnapping us that I think it's ill-advised to let them continue to have anything to do with the regulation or the enforcement of the regulation of this industry or this culture.
All right. Well said there, D. And all right, we're about to get out of here. I want to thank Blake Schroeder for being on the show, and I want to thank the audience for listening. Everybody subscribe to the Cannabis Corner. And I want to thank you, Dig, for being on the show today.
Yeah, and thank everyone for listening.
If you have questions or would like to comment on the show, you can reach us at thecannabiscorner840@gmail.com. To listen to back episodes or to subscribe to the show, find us all across the internet by searching The Cannabis Corner. How can folks get in touch with you, Dig?
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram at Uncle Dig, and you can listen to my podcast, The Bagseed Chronicles, wherever you get podcasts.
Thank you to Radio Tacoma and KTQA for their continued support. I'd also like to thank Aaron Foles for his production assistance. And finally, thank you for joining us on The Cannabis Corner.